So I'm here today talking with the composer Christopher Cerrone, and also the flutist Tim Munro, two luminaries in the new music world. We're here to talk about a new album, which is called Liminal Highway. That's the entire piece. It's an EP for flute and electronics, music by Chris Cerrone, and the performance by Tim Munro. First of all, welcome to the book. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Of course. What a pleasure.
Yeah. I guess we should start by saying a little bit about you guys. Now, Chris, you're out in Brooklyn. Is that right?
That's right. Here in the heart of Flatbush, Brooklyn.
Yeah. And Tim, you're in Chicago?
Chicago, Illinois.
You're a flutist, but you're more than that. I mean, can you talk a little bit about your background? You were with 8th Electric for a while. Just give us a little 101 on what you do, Tim.
Tim Munro 101. Okay, it'll be a class in the fall.
Yes. 20 at BGSU. Words or less.
No.
That's true. I have an album called 1, 2, 3, quite literally. I'm from Australia originally. I came over to the US to study at Oberlin College, just semi down the road from where you are. And I went back to Australia after that, and by a stroke of luck received an email one day that said there was an opening in an ensemble called 8th Blackbird based out of Chicago. And I flew across the world, took an audition, and it changed my life. I think that maybe the easiest thing to say about me is that up until that point, I was 100% a flute player and 0% anything else. Everything else that I did, I thought of as not core to who I was. And 8th Blackbird, 9 years that I played in 8th Blackbird, really taught me about all of the different things that I could do. It helped me realize that I was in some ways like a musician first and a flute player second. And nowadays, I split my time between a variety of different sorts of work and employers, and I have a position at the St. Louis Symphony as their creative partner, where I broadcast and write and curate. And I'm also the flute player with the Grossman Ensemble based out of the University of Chicago. And I am a human for hire. Other than that, I do a bunch of different sorts of things.
Yeah, it sounds like you're pretty busy. I want to ask how the pandemic has affected everything, but let's shift over and talk with Chris briefly first. Chris, you're a fantastic composer. I play your music on the radio. I know people enjoy it very much. You write music that is, I would say, driven by timbre, driven by textual inspirations. It's cerebral, yet, you know, that word accessible at the same time. Can you tell us a little bit about your work as a composer?
Sure. Yeah, I think you definitely hit the nail on the head with that. I'd say that I do strive to write music that is cerebral yet accessible. And I would say that my big interests as a composer are color, sound, and also I'd say architecture and form, and thinking about how music can be a journey for a listener. And so I would say that I'm very, very interested in those things. And I'd say I'm very interested in music that connects with other art forms, literature. I do a lot of vocal music with text and work with writers increasingly. And then also, more often than not, I've written one big opera, I'm starting a second, and worked a lot with sort of dance and visual artists. And so I'd say I'm very interested in collaborative work. And part of this project even has a film attached to it. So yes, I'm a composer who's interested in getting beyond the niches of contemporary music.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Liminal Highway, this piece you wrote in 2016. The recording is coming out very shortly from New Focus Recordings. And this is a piece that addresses that sort of semi-awake state between sleeping and being awake. Can you tell us, first of all, what Liminal Highway is about? Maybe not all people even know what the word liminal means. I had to look it up myself. Mm-hmm. But can you give us an overview?
Sure.
of the word?
I think the word liminal tends to talk about things literally at the limit, at the edges. And so people often talk about liminal spaces, spaces that are in between things. And the title actually is a very sweet poem by, I grew up, I should say, probably more not in the classical world than in the classical world. I studied classical piano, but I also played jazz bass. I played jazz piano. I played electric guitar and punk bands. And so one of my favorite punk bands was a group called The Weaker Thens, a group from Winnipeg, Canada. And their primary songwriter and lyricist is a guy named John K. Sampson. And he is also really a poet in his own right and had published a book of poems and lyrics. And so half of the book was lyrics to songs he'd written. I'd say he's sort of like the pop punk Canadian Bob Dylan in terms of his skill as a writer. And but he had this one beautiful poem that was not, I didn't want to mess with his lyrics because I think that lyrics are lyrics, poems are poems, but he had this one beautiful poem called Liminal Highway that I just absolutely loved, and starts with the line, "When you fall asleep in transit." And so that was sort of the inspiration for the poem, was this description of a person who in a kind of dreamlike state half falls asleep on their way home, and sort of it goes on this kind of imaginative journey. And that, yeah, I sort of, when I started writing this piece, I started thinking about writing a piece that is on the liminal space between electronic and live, and the liminal space between dreamlike and waking, and to sort of always do a lot of blurring, especially with what is, I mean, it's interesting. I was sort of emailing with a critic about this piece the other night, and she asked me for a score, which I thought was, you know, not totally common for a music critic. But, you know, I think she wanted to know what was live and what was acoustic, because it's all so merged in the piece. And so that's what I set out to do. And I think also to ideally blend something that is like cerebral and sweet. Liminality is a cerebral concept, but the poem is actually very touching.
Tim, can you tell us how you came to be associated with this project?
Yeah. So Chris and I first worked together when I was in Eighth Blackbird, and his then composer collective, Sleeping Giant, wrote a piece, a sort of 6-part piece for us. And I was immediately drawn to Chris's music because of all of that very kind of liminality that you're talking about, the in-betweenness of kind of smart and heart, and between sound and silence. And there's all of these kind of elements. And also what Chris touched on before, taking people on a journey. I mean, I just think of myself increasingly as someone who loves music that really tells a story, maybe not a literal story, but takes you on that sort of journey. So I was like immediately drawn to Chris's music. We applied for a grant through New Music USA, which we were lucky enough to receive. And then I had the opportunity to play a solo concert at Miller Theatre in New York City. And I approached them about co-commissioning the piece. So the piece, it all sort of came together in a lovely way. And as an extra kind of note of liminality, the premiere performance took place the 2 days after the 2016 election. And it added an extra element that I will always think of in association with this piece, which is a kind of like difficult, strange transition, you know, a moment that we were all kind of going through in our brains.
I recall that concert in a complete stupor. Like, I remember riding up to the rehearsals and being like, where am I right now? And so, yes, definitely that whole week was a total blur, and I have very little memory of it.
Totally.
Well, I would say, first of all, the flute is like, you know, the perfect instrument to bring this kind of thing to life, this idea of the state between sleeping and wakefulness. But there's a whole bunch of drama in this piece as well. You think of the flute as, you know, having kind of these ethereal, relaxing tones. But you do a lot with extended techniques and in conjunction with the electronics that really kind of goes against what you might expect in a piece like this. Tim, can you talk a little bit about the extended techniques that you use and how your instrument is used with the electronics?
Sure. Well, one of the things I love about Chris's music is that Chris takes an instrument and basically rethinks about it, like builds it from kind of from the ground up. Chris bought a $60 flute from Amazon, which he has right there. You want to give us some notes?
I can play.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Liminal Highway.
Yeah, actually, that's the beginning of the second movement. And what's great about that is actually one of the things that Chris we learned is that a $60 flute from Amazon is almost better for Chris's music than my whatever, you know, thousands of dollars high-end professional model flute, because the more expensive the flute, the more it is designed to not make sounds percussive noises and for the keys to not make sounds. We learned a few things through that process, but I mean, essentially the piece is written. I mean, I think it's too much to say this, but there's a sense in which it's written for someone who is a high level musician who is learning the instrument for the first time and without an expectation of like, here is a beautiful, you know, I am influenced by the music of how Mozart wrote for the instrument, how Bach wrote for the instrument, how Mozart wrote for the instrument, how Fauré wrote for the instrument, how Mačinsky wrote for the, you know, this kind of like sense that we have in flute world where we kind of like get to a point now where composers for flute to kind of take the history of the flute into consideration when they write it. Chris just like ignored all of that and learned how to play the flute. And
there's
a lovely sense.
I think there's a whole 20th century problem with flute music where it is a very big, important instrument to most flute players. But I actually think that that is mostly a really bad, cliched collection of sounds as well. So in addition to trying to avoid the historical flute, I tried to avoid the cliche-ridden contemporary flute sounds too, which is a kind of air sounds and kind of very gestural writing and... you know, I love, there's a great Morton Feldman quote about a flute piece, actually, where I think he says, like, oh, you know, you write a flute. You know, you write, you know, start low, go high, go back down again. And, you know, you just write a bunch of gestural crap. And like, but you probably wouldn't call it gestural crap. And so that was my favorite Feldman quote of almost of all time. And so I was avoiding gestural crap. Approach to instrumental writing is more often than not bound in some kind of physical connection to the instrument itself, and that's always a way for me to become inspired. I mean, I'm always sort of like looking for hacks in composing, and I think that you know, if you sit at your computer, like, it's sort of like input equals output. If you use really good olive oil, oh, here it is, Tim, cooking reference. if you use really good olive oil and really good flour and really good mozzarella, the chances of your pizza being tasty are a lot higher than if you use a bunch of crap. And I think the same thing is true of composing. If you start with the same methodology that everyone else starts with, a piece of paper or a Spalius file or whatever, and, you know, use the default sounds, the odds of the output being similar is just, I think, sort of inexorable or inevitable. It's really about you know, short-circuiting the process of composing. So I know nothing else sounds like the second movement of Liminal Highway because no one else has written the piece that way except maybe another flutist. And so I try to merge, you know, some sort of technical knowledge of the instrument with my own kind of conceptual composerly training. And hopefully the result is both idiomatic, or if not idiomatic, like, I mean, I think it's very idiomatic in the sense that it's extremely of the instrument, but it's not idiomatic in that, you know, the way you hand it to someone and they could just play it instantly. So it's I think the approach is to kind of just find a new way into something that also makes a lot of sense to the player in one way or another.
Tim, did Chris come to you with the piece while he was writing it and say things like, you know, what do you think of this? Can you do that? The sort of talk about a little bit about the relationship between the two of you in bringing this piece to the concert hall.
Yeah, we had a pretty close working relationship early in the piece's journey. We had 2 days together in New York in a studio, just essentially like trying a bunch of stuff out. And then Chris and I went back and forth a lot over text and email. I sent him samples. I sent him bits and pieces. And then essentially he went away and wrote the piece.
I think I checked in with you every now and again too. And I think, you know, thinking about, we talked a lot about the electronics and how they'd function and what would be alive and what would be electronic. But yeah, that's true. There was a big I feel like I do. I have like a big early on research phase, and then kind of from there I go away and come back with, you know, 40,000 layers of that thing, and then say, literally, I'm doing that right now in another piece. I'm like, oh yeah, I sent you a bunch of like weird things to record, and then I come back and there's a piece.
I also like that Chris has told me that he has sort of one or more of person that he checks in with of every instrument. So when he's writing an orchestral piece, he wants a flute fingering, or he wants to know whether a certain dynamic is correct or whether this should be written for first flute or second flute, he always sends me a message.
That's true.
And I guess you have like 36 other people in.
Oh yeah.
And I love that. I think actually musicians love that sort of engagement. It feels weirdly like. As Chris was sort of hinting, the composers are often buried in their own selves and in their own computers, and there is a sense in which, as a creator, a lot of your time has to be spent in private, you know, in your own world. But the struggle is to then know when to reach out and when to engage, and I think Chris's music really speaks to that sense of that sense of engagement.
Well, yeah. And I think that, you know, performers, you know, how do I not talk negatively? I think that the best, collaborations are when the performer is really involved in a compositional process. And, I think there's I've had some commissioners who've just been really uninterested, and I wound up finding like a surrogate collaborator, you know, in the process. And if you're not really want to get in, I mean, you should want to get into the weeds because you're paying for a composer to do something for you. You know, that'd be like me commissioning a house and be like, I just do whatever you want. Like, build me a house. Make it look cool.
Yeah, but I think we as classical musicians are taught that composers are inaccessible. Literally because 98% of them, the ones that we play, are dead. So we're just taught in some ways that that is not even a collaboration that we can think of having. That's good. I think that's incredibly negative. Well, but
and that's true. And I'd say like some of my best collaborations are with people who are the least classical, whether especially like percussionists who are used to kind of not seeing the score as such a kind of insistently true thing, and they always have to mess with stuff and change it, and it, you know the more the instrument is embedded in Western history, the more I think that attitude comes up, and the less it is. I mean, you know, if you're already a bassoonist and you're making an Ophicleide part into your bassoon part, or was that a tuba? Like, I can't remember, but like if you're already,
it's like a tuba with reed, it's like a reed tuba or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, there's no reed, hold on.
Yeah, and like it's actually funny, I'm starting this big tuba for weird, very interesting, challenging concerto. Maybe you can come down to it, Brad. It'll be in Cincinnati next year for the Cincinnati Symphony, a concerto for tuba and trumpet and orchestra. And that's another instrument that's like just formed itself recently, really. And even like famous tuba things don't work. And so the more I think that musicians live outside that, the more they're like, want to get in the weeds, and the less they do, they're just like violinists can be very, give me the piece later, you know. And so
yeah
but you get way better ROI, you know, return on investment if you get into the weeds with the composer.
let's talk a little bit more about the music itself. You've got five different movements here. Each of them are titled after a line from the poem that we mentioned earlier. And you say there's a journey. Tim, can you talk a little bit about that journey and how it is represented by the music?
I mean, I'll throw this to Chris pretty soon. Chris writes a lot of works that are in sort of three movements or five movements or seven movements or nine movements. Actually, I'm sure you haven't gotten up to nine.
I think the highest is seven. I've never gone past seven.
But there is a little bit of a sense that often there's an arch. There's a kind of apex point. And then the music kind of unfurls after that. But the journey, I mean, I'll speak for the journey as a flute player. I really feel like when I play that first note that I'm more than almost any other piece I know in absolute total concentration mode, because that's the thing that this piece demands more than physical dexterity, like technical finger dexterity, which is often the thing that is quite challenging for flute pieces, or even like challenges of different ranges. The thing that is demanded by this piece is incredible concentration and stamina. And I love that sense of a journey that I have. And actually that apex point, which is this big giant release of a loud high note that is then grabbed by the electronics and becomes this 70-second long reverb. That moment for me is an incredible moment of catharsis, because everything that's led up to that point is terrifying. And so I have to concentrate at every moment completely on what's going on. I'm just like so completely in the moment. So I love that the journey of the piece, I think for a listener, is also kind of the journey that I go on.
Mm. You mentioned that huge echo reverb effect. How do the electronics, and maybe Chris, you should answer this. How were they assembled? How do they fit with the flute? Where did you find some of the elements that you use in the electronic component?
Yeah. Well, the biggest challenge of performing Liminal Highway is to avoid feedback, honestly, because of all the reverbs in the piece and delays. And so that's actually the biggest technical challenge, I think. It's almost a duet, and I think it goes better when there's a good electronics person involved. I don't know if I've known anyone to literally do it completely by themselves so far. They've usually had someone working on sound. So, yeah, the piece uses a lot of what are called convolution reverbs, which is literally you multiply one sound against the other and you get a reverb. So you have your space, your flute, and then you have, in this case, the recording of an oil tanker. No, it's not an oil tanker. You remember what it is, Tim. It's a...
It's an oil storage tank that's underground in Scotland that was like was built during the Second World War, I want to say, but never used.
Mm-hmm. And it has the longest naturally occurring reverb in the world. So someone took an impulse response, which is basically like a clap in that space. And so the sound here is run through a sample of that crazy space. And basically when he does it live, there's a little on button in the electronics, which turns on the reverb for a second. You play the note, turns off so you don't get tons of feedback. And you just get that little like, and so it hits there. So that's one of the biggest acoustic effects in the piece. And actually the whole end of that movement takes that sound and reverses it. So you have a 90 second crescendo just from the reversing of that single flute sound run through that sound. And then the final movement of the piece actually takes that sound and stretches it out to be three times as long. So you have a single sound decay for almost 2 minutes. And that was one of the big ideas when first writing the piece, was thinking about sound, thinking about how sound decays over long periods of time, and how it sort of transforms and like memory, you know, you sort of looking back on something from 2 minutes before and the sound of it is very different than when it was 2 minutes ago. And to just live in that kind of space was a big idea of this piece.
Liminal Highway from New Focus Recordings that is coming out on the 21st of August, right? Where can folks get a hold of this recording?
It is a digital-only recording, so they can get it from any streaming service that you or... you can buy it through Bandcamp and through the New Focus website or through Amazon. You can stream it on Spotify or Apple Music or any service of your choice. And there will be an accompanying film that will be released on YouTube as well, also on the 21st. And it'll be done and released in collaboration with Miller Theater, the original commissioners of the piece, along with Music USA. And it'll be on Facebook. It'll be on Instagram as well. So literally anywhere on the internet, you can get it.
Yeah.
Probably for free. So... no excuse.
But we encourage anyone who wants to support us as artists to purchase it from Bandcamp.
Yes.
Because that way
10,000 hours went into mixing this project and creating the film. And it was an enormous amount of work and also money. So yes, please do support us and hire Tim to play the piece and commission me to write more music as well.
Absolutely. So, Tim, you're not the first person who's told me to go to Bandcamp for these recordings. So hopefully we can send
people there. Bandcamp
is
an unbelievable service. They give more money to artists than any other service. And for all the streaming revolution, just buying an album goes over. I make more money off these kind of Bandcamp sales than I would off 2 years of a Spotify stream. You can get, 50,000 Spotify streams, and it's like two copies sold on Bandcamp.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that it has created its own kind of record club, its own kind of LP shop. It's like it's where people go to find to discover new, strange, wonderful artists. I think it's a fascinating place to actually go explore.
So, composer Christopher Cerrone, flutist Tim Monroe, together they've released Liminal Highway, a new EP from New Focus Recordings. Wonderful, beautiful music. I hope people go to Bandcamp, to your Bandcamp link, and listen to and download and purchase this album. It's just wonderful. I want to thank you both for spending time with me this morning, being very generous with your time and the information about the piece itself. And perhaps we'll have another conversation down the road. But thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad. Really appreciate it.